Sitting in the audience and watching this and saying how wonderful, how free, how exciting, what's happening to people. Do you remember it? Do you remember hair? Aquarius, the Age of Aquarius. Organed in by Marilyn Ferguson, a friend who in fact, recently passed. Marilyn Ferguson did this beautiful book called The Age of Aquarius. The Aquarian Conspiracy. That was the name of the book. And it was a beautiful book about how you bring modern, holistic concepts into business and the world, and how the world in this Age of Aquarius is changing to a point where we can now embrace our own spirituality. Well, I mean, what a concept, spirituality. What's that like? What's it like to be spiritual? You see, then for 20 years, we tried to see how spirituality would work as an intention. And many of us took that intention of being the spiritual, guided, enlightened, embracing all other beings, while our government marched into Iraq with guns and flamethrowers and said, I'll give you spiritual, right? Yeah, you guys who wear sheets on your head, we'll get you. So there we were with our peaceful demonstrations and trying everything we could to say life is valuable and we're all connected. And it didn't do very well in the long run. It did well for us. But it didn't work. The idea of putting it out there didn't work. It doesn't seem to work. It doesn't help with your 401k plan. It doesn't help you with retirement. It doesn't help you get a better job. It just makes you feel good, which is not a bad idea. My guest, my co-host, Bernie Starr. Bernie Starr has written a lot about spirituality and psychotherapy. Bernie, welcome back. Here we are.
Great to be back.
Come on.
Yeah. So, Bernie, let's take on this issue of spirituality, and let's think about it. Let's take, there are two sides to it. I am going to say that if I were to consider myself a being, I consider myself a thinking, feeling, emotional, and I also think of myself as a spiritual being connected to the universe, whatever that means. Yet there's some downside to the way that spirituality is incorporated in people's lives. And I thought what we'd do is we'd start off with the downside, because you've studied both.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about spirituality and what's wrong with it. What's the bad news?
Okay. I think first you have to recognize that, and I speak to young people all the time, of why so many people are seeking out spirituality. And if you ask them, they'll say, well, I'm looking for meaning. They're asking the big questions of life. And often they feel they're not getting it from their religious upbringing. People I speak to, young people, we all have had religious training of various kind. They've had their confirmations, bar mitzvahs, and they leave and they say, I'm still in the dark. I'm lost and I'm looking for something. I'm looking for meaning. I want to know what my purpose is, why I'm here. So they join various spiritual movements. But sometimes that quest that they have could really be escapism. Okay, you even ask some of these people to define spirit. What is spirituality to you? I've asked this to classes of mine and to young people, and somebody would get up and say, I'm mindful of the planet. I recycle my garbage. I conserve electricity and water. I don't wear furs. I'm a vegetarian," somebody said to me. Well, that's not quite what some of the spiritual traditions would say what they are. They would say that they're deeper philosophies about consciousness, about who you are, about how you relate to the world. So then we find that a lot of these young people are really seeking some kind of escape into spirituality. Now, for some, it may have a positive value. That I know one person who joined a spiritual group and stayed there for a number of years, and it was kind of like an incubation period. The person was able to work out his purpose in life and his interests, and then he came back into the world and was quite successful.
But from what you're saying, I think, Bernie, is that a person could easily escape into spirituality and find spirituality as their route outside. There are a lot of people I know who have a difficulty organizing things. They have random minds, and their minds, they just, you know, there's a group of people who could bring every line up all the ducks, you know, the accountants and the bookkeepers and the people you know who put everything in order. And then there are the people who can't keep their mind concentrated. They call them ADHD. They have difficulty focusing. The people with the most difficulty focusing are the most attracted to spirituality because it has no real focus. So what they get, and what they get as a result of it, is a chance to let their random minds find validation through embracing a concept so big that they don't have to follow through. They don't have to pin it down, nail it down.
Yes, well, that's very true, and that's the kind of escapism you often find where somebody, I've observed this all the time of young people that I've observed where they come into the ashram or the spiritual seminar, and they're very open. They love everybody. They take this very spiritual posturing. And they're detached, and they talk about peacefulness and whatnot. But then you observe them outside, and you see that none of that is true in the actual playing out of their lives. And the other thing is, and I think that this is the tip-off, that all...
Wait, don't leave that one. So many people will embrace a spiritual concept. And they'll have a spiritual concept, and they'll say, "Oh, I'm all with one, and I'm God with nature, and I love everybody." But then they get into their own private worlds, and when they leave the spiritual environment, they are just brutal. I mean, I know a lot of people who are in relationships, Bernie, who are very spiritual people, but they brutalize each other. They're horrible with each other. They scream at each other. They accuse each other. They slap each other around, maybe not physically, but emotionally. And then they get beaten down emotionally, and they come around, but these are spiritual people. I know people who meditate endlessly, and when they meditate, and yet they have this tremendous amount of tension that they carry with them. So spirituality very often is, I think what you're saying, compartmentalized. It's like, that's one part of me.
Yes, but when you say that this couple is fighting all the time, and they're vicious with each other, but they're spiritual... what does that mean?
That means I'm going to kill you till you die, and then you'll go to heaven, and in heaven you'll be spiritual. Right, what does it mean? What does it mean that they have this, embracing this concept of spirituality, when you could walk out of your ashram, or you could walk out of the place you meditate and see a homeless person laying on the sidewalk who doesn't have any money at all, and you could just pass them by?
Well, exactly. So,
by the way, I want one announcement to everybody. Nowadays, as the winter comes around, there's a new service set up by New York City that if you do see a homeless person who you think is in trouble, you can dial 311 and they will send aid. So it's just 311, give them a name, and they will send the aid to the person there. It's a new thing put into our by our city.
Well, and that's growing with the crisis
sure.
around. You see more and more homeless people.
And with the cold weather coming in.
Yes. I mean, I do the lunch service at St. John the Divine for the homeless on Sundays. We had this past Sunday the biggest crowd I've
really?
Ever seen. I mean, it was really quite striking. But back to our spirituality. And what
you're
we're
such a good guy. You're such a good. You do a lunch service at St. John the Divine.
Oh yeah, yeah.
How long have you been doing that?
For the last 3 or 4 years.
God bless you. Good. All right, go ahead. Continue.
Yeah. Well, that's a subject we could take up sometime.
We could take up how much I admire you.
No, the subject.
But we could
the
take
homeless
up that
and
subject.
Who they
I
are
think
and
such a good
why
guy.
They're not successful by conventional standards, and you know, and that we are. But this split that we're talking about of people who could act one way, they could be vicious to each other, totally non-spiritual, but in the spiritual environment, suddenly they're in touch with the universe, they're, you know, totally spiritual beings. And that's a problem. That's a problem of how do you get such individuals to see that split?
Well, what if you are, and I can think of a couple of organizations I know that are, I can think of some organizations that some of my audience listening to would probably know, which is, you know, and this isn't, these are people that do good in the world, but within the do-gooders, like Doctors Without Borders, and I'm not sure it happens within them, or a public radio station, people are, they have a great, great concept. We want to serve people. We want to serve the universe. We are all spiritual. And then they cut each other's throat when they're with each other. And then they're competing all the time, and they're talking badly about each other. And then they get out there and they try to say, look, we are this wonderful, universal, serving group. And yet when they're one-to-one, they don't practice that stuff.
Yeah. Yes, well, that's what I call the near enemies.
Yes, and what is the near enemy?
The near enemies are practices that look and sound very spiritual, and they could be if they're practiced in a spiritual way. But when you look at the way some individuals actually implement them, they're frauds in a way. For example, people who talk about, think of one person in particular, you know, the now moment is a very popular spiritual
right.
concept. There have been books written
sure,
about
living
it.
In the now.
Living in the now. Eckhart Tolle's
Eckhart
book, The Power
book.
Of
Come
of
out of
now.
Psychosis into seeing the universe. And
right. So everybody wants to be in the now moment, you know, not in the past, not in the future. Everything
mm-hmm, sure.
exists here and now. Well, one person I heard say is at a party. Okay, now picture this person. Person's at a party and is attracted to a woman. And he says to her, you know, I'm attracted to her and I want to have you now. And he feels very spiritual because, you know, he's acting in the now moment. But at the same time, he's forgetting, well, he has another relationship, a committed relationship, somebody who he may be living with, he has
right.
other responsibilities, et cetera, et cetera. So the now becomes a very, and this is a very graphic example
yeah,
of it.
Good, perfect.
It's a very self-serving now.
Urges are now, okay. right.
You know, so that's a different now than what Eckhart Tolle is talking about.
I have a wonderful story about that. A young lady I knew, someone I knew, not a young lady, someone I knew really well, she was at a party, and it was a party where everybody was spiritual, and a man walks over to her and he says, I've known you from another lifetime. And she said, yes, the future. And she walked away.
That's
hey,
beautiful.
I'm on Little Bernie Star, the near enemy. Spiritual practices. Yeah. Now, what about the bank account?
Well, that's you know, another near enemy, that there are people who think that if you accumulate various spiritual experiences, various practices, that it goes into a bank account, and then when you reach a certain level, you get your annuity. Boom, you're enlightened.
Well, you know, when I grew up, I used to ask about prayer. And, you know, John is in the studio. John, did you pray a lot when you were a kid? Were you Catholic? And what we used to do is we would have people who did rosary beads. And I was doing, why they doing a rosary beads means you say a prayer and you count a number and you pass it on, you do another one and you do another one. You have to do like 1,000 a day or something. And I would ask, what are these for? And they'd say, you save them up so that when you need them, God counts the number that you did. And he has it. It's like a frequent flyer miles.
Yeah, well, lots of luck.
Right? And so this is what you eventually use in this concept of prayer. What is it? I mean, people actually believe that if they do good, well, that's this concept of what goes around comes around. That's the answer, the secret. You know, the latest of the New Age crazes is you have to believe that whatever you do, the way the intention that you take into the earth is going to be the intention that comes back towards you. Now, that's the latest of the New Age. This is even more important than now.
Well, here you're talking about the secret.
The secret, yes.
Yeah, wow.
Well, it's not such a secret because I'm talking about it.
We've talked about that privately, and I've written a number of articles about that. I mean, I think...
Well, what do you believe? Go ahead.
First, you can't knock positive. Now, you have a show called The Positive Mind, but you deal with a genuine kind of positive. The secret uses the term positive in a very magical kind of way. Positive is a first step. I mean, there's no way that you could reject or negate positive. And I find the minute I start talking in some kind of critical way about the secret or whatnot, people will say, oh, you must be negative.
Sure, we'll get positive. A lot of letters. Okay. You know, okay. All right, so, letters could be forwarded to me, and I'll send them to Bernie Starr, whatever he says.
So I would say at the outset, yes, be positive. But we know that it's a first step, that it's not magical.
But I don't think that's the whole point. The point of the secret is not just be positive. The point of the secret, I believe, is that if you put out energy without asking for anything back, it's going to come back to you.
Yes, but the secret asks for something to come back. The secret is all about getting stuff. It's all
about
me.
But how do you get it?
Me.
But it's going to come back to you. It's like it's going to magic like a boomerang.
Yes, well, it's like...
Like if I put out love in the universe, somebody's going to love me properly, not just use me and throw me away.
Well, that certainly is a good beginning, but there's no guarantee. See, the secret kind of implies that there are guarantees involved, that if you think positively and that you really resonate with the universe, your friend, the universe, whatever that means exactly, that you can, the law of attraction, then you could have anything that you want. And they give some very, you know, concrete examples of it, that if you want a Lexus, let's say, and this is a real example in the book, that you think positively and you think Lexus. You see yourself, you picture yourself, you visualize yourself in that Lexus. And, you know, somehow, because of that positive thinking, you're going to maximize the probability of you actually getting that Lexus. Well, forget about the guy doesn't have a job, you know, he has no money in the bank, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, life doesn't work that way.
Well, you know, but funny way, I mean, he may be in a culture where all the auto workers go bankrupt, and then these cars, because oil is no longer available, are left on the side of the street, and then one day he's walking along and there's an abandoned Lexus, you see, and he said, man, it works. But of course the whole world had to collapse first.
Right. There's another statement in the book that it's as easy to manifest $1 million as a dollar. You know, so my answer to that was, well, if you're stuck with one of those, you know, subprime mortgages, forget about worrying about your next payment. Just pay off the whole damn mortgage.
You bring up a very good point, Bernie, because, you know, in an economy that was inordinately exuberant, I like that, both words put together, where you have this exuberance and you have these people who are all building up and buying houses and getting loans and getting more houses. In that economy, and I'm talking about the economy of last year, which was an illusion, in that world, the secret and the spiritual concept worked. It basically said, build it and they will come. You know, it really worked. Because if you bought houses, you found renters.
Well, it worked until the collapse came.
It worked until the collapse. So now here's the news. Spirituality is good in an affluent society. How does it work in the non-affluent society? Well, let's go to some of the places where there's this intense spirituality in different cultures. How does it work? Not the capitalistic ones. Let's talk about Iraq. Let's talk about Iran. And let's talk about, you know, the other cultures who have intense spirituality.
Well, but there you can ask, is that really genuine spirituality also? Or is it political movements hijacking religion and spirituality? I mean, a lot of people would argue that.
that religion in itself to you may be using, maybe an organization that uses spirituality as a way of controlling people? Is that
absolutely
what you're saying?
I mean, I think that we're seeing that in many parts of the world today.
You know, when I thought the economy fell, my you want to know when the economy triggered? When when we were watching the events from China, you know, when we were watching the wonderful, wonderful events of China, and we were watching these beautiful Olympics. The opening of the Olympic, where they had this spectacular Olympic opening with 7,000 or 20,000 people marching in unison, and they were doing it so perfectly that everybody was admiring it. Look at it. Look at how the Chinese people can do this and not miss a single step. And I knew the shame and discipline that was required of each person who did that. And I said, yeah, and if any one of them missed a step, they'd be shamed out of existence. So when I looked at it, when I saw all these people working so beautifully like robots, I said, the world's in trouble. Because everybody was admiring it. Everybody said, look how beautiful that is. And I said, oh, how scary that is. And that happens again with spirituality, you know, and I think that was the very turn in the economy. I think from that moment on, everything fell apart.
Well, you're also talking about illusion. I mean, spirituality can involve a lot of illusion, but, you know, illusion eventually will collapse.
Hey, do you think that magic is spirituality? How do you like that? Do you think that if, you know, a guy can make a tiger disappear in a tank, you know, is that spirituality, or is that...
Well, if I don't know what you would call it. That would be pretty impressive, but, you know, there's another side to that. We know that, as every magician knows, to pull a rabbit out of a hat, there has to be a rabbit in the hat.
And but what about the guys who do have some powers? What about the people who have extraordinary powers to perceive? I do. You know, I see things that other people don't see. I don't consider it spiritual, but I know a lot of people do. What about people who could use energy? I remember Itzhak Bentov, an old friend of mine, used to bend spoons with his will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not the illusory stuff. What about people who do have extraordinary powers that we can't necessarily understand, but they could demonstrate these powers? Now, the trouble with them is there's a rule in the spiritual universe, as I understand it, which is the following. If you use the development of the higher chakras in service of the lower chakras, you lose all your power. Now, here's what that means. If you have the ability to see things or do things that other people can't see, and you get up to the fourth chakra where you have enlightenment, and now you're enlightened and you see things that other people can't see, but you use them for sex, money, or power, the lower chakras, that's the test. It's almost like if you're a spiritual being, the one thing you don't do is tell people you're a spiritual being. The minute you sell it, you're no longer a spiritual being.
That's
so
true.
So all the gurus that I've ever met, every one of them who have an ashram, who have a following, they lose it. Every spiritual person I know who sits there and goes, ah, yam, yoma, and, you know, and gathers his flock and touches people with feathers, they don't have it. The ones that have it, the ones I've met some Buddhist priests who are tremendously powerful, but they have no need to use it as a way to either get sex, money, or power.
Mm-hmm. But there are some that that do, and we've seen lots of examples of gurus and spiritual teachers who abuse their power. And what this says is that you could be highly developed in some areas, and that doesn't mean that it's totally integrated into every other area of your life.
It's a funny thing when you say abuse. You know, it's just... They become greedy with it. In other words, so if a guy has a high spiritual development, and I hate to use Catholic priests, but I won't, all right, and then he gives in to his passions, I think what happens is the universe has a test for you. It says, I'm going to give you extra perception. And if you could take this perception and not use it for greed, we're going to let you have more perception. But if you do use it for greed, we're going to keep you right there. Therefore, all the TV evangelists, I think they are special. But I think they had an opportunity and they missed it. You know, all the ones who go the greedy way. And I think all the spiritualists I know who sell spirituality, look on the internet, put in the word spiritual, and somebody's selling you spiritual something. I think anybody who sells anything spiritual is automatically not got it.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of spiritual scams around, is there?
But not even a scam. But see, they don't think it's a scam because the guy who's got it, who thinks that if he puts his hands on your forehead and you relax, that you actually get better. I don't know if it's necessarily a scam because sometimes they delude themselves
into
these mystical powers.
And there are people who apparently have some very strong powers, healing powers. There's a lot of mystery out there. In the
stuff
world.
We don't understand.
Now, of course, people who reject this, they will call this, well, that's supernatural stuff. I mean, frankly, I've never quite understood what supernatural means. It's used in a pejorative sense of rejecting something, that if it's supernatural, it can't be. But the fact is, if something is, it is. And we have an obligation to investigate some of these phenomena to see, you know, is it true? I mean, Sai Baba supposedly can materialize mm-hmm. things. I've been to Puttaparthi. I've observed him do some things, but I've never observed it that close up. And, you know, I'm not sure personally that he could do that. I've heard testimony from other people, quite credible people, scientists, physicians who have been there, even magicians who have observed him, and said, well, it's no trick that I know. So I leave that as an open question. But if it's true, if he could do that and others could do these other things, if healings could take place...
Then there's just something about the we don't know about
don't
human
know.
Energy that will be explained eventually, and we'll see how intention can affect the molecular movement of something. We'll learn that eventually.
Right, but it doesn't mean that that everybody could do it or that that you or I could do it. We may be able to do some things. You used a word before, which I think is very important, particularly in relation to the secret, and that was discipline, just the word discipline. Because that's what's absent from the secret. It starts out by saying, oh, you know, historically there was this great conspiracy between some great people like Albert Einstein, Henry Ford, you know, other great innovators in history, Albert Einstein. But the fact is that those people were geniuses, and they had tremendous determination and stick-to-itiveness, and they worked hard. Yes, thinking positively and having confidence in their ideas may have been the first step on the ladder, the springboard, for this to blossom. But without the discipline, without that determination, forget about it. It's not going to happen, and it was not a conspiracy. Those people didn't know each other. It was not a private club like, the Da Vinci Code.
Well, discipline and self-discipline and the ability to, you know, even self-discipline sounds like a bad word. It sounds like you have somebody with a whip over you. But really the idea is, can you follow through and do you follow through? Do you have one thought and go through with it? Do you complete stuff? And if you don't complete anything and you float from one to the other, you could be a beautifully spiritual person, but you can't be effective on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's the idea? You could be effective for yourself. So therein goes spirituality becomes a self experience. But by definition, spirituality is an other experience. It's supposed to be a universal self. Well, these are very important questions. But, you know, we want to hear you talk about it, too. And when you call in, I'd like you to ask some questions without preaching today. You know, it's going to be easy to get on air and say, you know, Sai Baba says, and all you have to do is, and so on and so forth. But let's see what your questions about your own spirituality are. And that's what I'm going to be asking you. What is your question about your own spirituality? And at 212-209-2900, we're going to take a short break. I'm going to play one more piece from Hair today because it has such a deeply emotional, real connection. And then we'll come back with you with your phone calls at 212-209-2900. We'll be right back.
Singing. We are Soweto Gospel Choir. And you are listening to BAI New York. BAI New York. San Banani.
Hey, this is Smokey Robinson, and you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM. York.
Let the music take your mind. Ooh. TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here, WBAI, New York.
Conundrum, as I remember, because that was the question, you know. Hey, I'm being as spiritual as I could be. I'm being open. I'm being loving, and I'm getting beat all over the head. How could people be so cruel? Tough stuff. You've been a therapist for a long time, Bernie. You know, people come to you, and they come to you with these, I don't know what I'm doing to make myself so attracted to bad situations, you know, and I've worked at my spiritual self so hard. What do you usually find that you could say to them? Not just what do you think, but what do you say to them that are like children who are kind of bleeding from their efforts?
Well, maybe there's something wrong with their effort. They may be asking the wrong questions, or they may be looking in the wrong place.
For example?
Well, the person that you're talking about, okay, say that again, what the person said coming in.
The person says to you, Bernie, I need your help. I've tried everything I could do. I don't get angry. I meditate. I am with this man, and he was supposed to be this beautiful guy, but he doesn't want to come near me, and he doesn't want to touch me, and he's having a relationship with somebody else, and I understand, and so I'm being accepting and loving, and I try to embrace the whole situation in my spiritual self, and I feel rotten.
Mm-hmm. Well, there, first of all, that person is talking about him or herself as if there were two people in the conversation, okay? So I don't know who that person is and what that person...
Instead of that person, make believe it's me talking to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So say it to me. I don't know who you are. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I don't know.
I'm asking you, what do you say to them? Not what do you think about them, but what do you say
to first
them?
I would want to know...
I
want to know a lot about you, what you've been doing, what your goals in life are, what your expectations are in a relationship, what it is that you're contributing to the relationship. You know, where are you in the mix? In the description you gave me, you talked about the other person, and you talked about what you want. You know, what you're aiming for, and you're, in effect, saying, hey, look, you know, I've done all the right things. I've made these investments. We're back to the bank account. You said, you know, I put these things in the bank. I did my spirituality. I meditated. I was good to this person. I did that practice. And, hey, and life isn't, you know, like it's a defiance of the secret. In a sense, this person is saying, hey, look, I did all the positive things. I did the right things. And that universe is not giving me what I deserve. So there's an egoism there, too. And there's an expectation that I deserve something automatically. So I would want to address that.
Address it by pointing out to a person that you seem to be expecting something by not putting in the effort?
By not putting in the effort, and maybe your expectations are... you know, are misguided.
You know, the thing I find the most when people take a spiritual path and they wind up being abused, that they are afraid to get angry. I could see that they just are trying to escape getting angry because they're not comfortable getting angry. So what I do in therapy is I guide them to finding their anger, not to take their anger to their mate, but to find out what it is about them that inhibits them from experiencing their own anger. Because what happens is you adopt spirituality in place of getting angry.
Right. And that's another great example of a near enemy. There you're talking about someone who has a lot of trouble dealing with anger. And rather than dealing with the issue and the problem of anger, the person says, well, I'm a spiritual person, and we spiritual people, we don't get angry. You know, we're compassionate. You know, we turn the other cheek. And that's just a cover-up for dealing with the problem. And that is, I mean, you put your finger on the essence of the concept of near enemies, how something that looks very much, very persuasively like a spiritual practice, I don't get angry. You know, I'm a compassionate person. And we know that that person is very angry underneath, though.
You know, it's kind of amazing. I think that people are... remarkable the way they adapt. Sure, it's say that you feel like you're a small animal in the world and you're really small compared to all the other animals. And you grow up in a world and a family where it seems it's inconvenient for you to get angry or be resentful. And so it's inconvenient for the people in charge. Your family doesn't want you to be angry. You're one of seven kids. Shut up. Go to your room. Keep quiet. So now here you are forced with this rage, a child's rage for whatever indignance or injustice that you sense, and you have to deal with it. There are many ways of dealing with it. One way is you could go kick the dog and take it out on your brother or do something like that. That's one. Or the other is you could blame yourself and say, oh, I'm a bad person. Look, my father told me I'm a bad person, so I'm bad. I'm going to go to my room. And the third is use your mind to leave the scene. Now, this way of dissociating is one of the ways that people have used to get away from some of the pain from early childhood. It's a form of dissociation, and the result of it is they adopt a spiritual practice as opposed to dealing with not only the anger they have in the present, but the injustice of their early childhood past.
And by the way, that's another good example of a near enemy, the near enemy of detachment. Okay. And that's a subject you hear over and over again in spiritual groups. Everybody is aiming for detachment. Many of the great gurus teach.
The Buddhists teach possessions.
And, of course, we know detachment, especially in the English language,
but
it's a lousy word.
I don't know a single Buddhist who's suffering with a bad 401k.
Well,
yeah, I mean, they're not suffering with the market going.
Well, maybe they are.
You
have to check that out more.
I know,
closely.
But what I'm saying is the whole idea of non-attachment also makes sense.
Yes, but we have to understand what attachment and detachment means. In English, it sounds, it's a bad term. Okay, detachment, it sounds unfeeling, uncaring. Maybe in other languages, detachment has other connotations. But the best definition I heard of detachment, which I really think speaks more to its essence, what it is detachment really is not being controlled by other people, by other situations or things, that you're not controlled by those things. It does not mean unfeeling. It means maintaining some kind of state of equanimity, that you accept the fact, and this is very Buddhist, that, you know, things happen, things come and go. There are positive and negative things that happen in life, and they're all part of the real now. And one in a meditative state, or one in connecting with what is referred to as a higher consciousness, or what I in my book refer to as omni-consciousness, that you have a different ground, a different grounding, and you could then take a much more objective view of the character who you have become, because you grew up in that family where people are at each other's throats and where they don't accept your anger and whatnot. And you could see yourself as having lived out as kind of like a character in a play. And you could see the space between that character and who you are as a conscious being, okay? And that was one character that you created. And you didn't create it in the sense willfully to create a character that is not well-functioning, but it happened as a result of your unique experiences in your environment, your mother, your father, your brother, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you became that character, and once you became that character, you've abandoned who you really are, and you've dedicated your life to being a better that character. And you can't get out of that character by doing that.
Telephone number here is 212-209-2900. Dr. Bernard Starr, Armand DeMille. We're going to take one of your calls and hear what you have to say about this. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello.
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 Hello. I like that. Want to do it again?
Hello.
That's wonderful.
I would like to ask a question, please.
Could you speak a little louder?
Sure, I would like to ask a question, please.
Please, go ahead.
I always find myself when thinking about spirituality, because I constantly ask myself why. There's so many different opinions and wonderful diversity among so many different religions and versions of spirituality. How do I stop thinking why? Or how can I be more satisfied?
Well, more satisfied with what?
I guess with the answers that I get.
But you have a questioning mind. You question everything.
Everything.
I know. So you question everything, and you're asking, why do I question religion? Because you question everything. Because you have the mind that is notoriously indecisive. Did you ever notice about how it's hard to make decisions?
Yes.
Yeah, how come? You don't know why, because your mind is always seeing two potentials. You see two possibles all the time. So for you, it's not a matter of sorting through, but it's a matter of a lifestyle of trying to make decisions. Now I'm going to take you back a little bit to when you were a little girl or a little person. When you were little, how did you use your mind to escape the chaos of your brutal family?
I just went off into my own little planet.
That's right. And how brutal was your family? Were they alcoholics?
No, it was just me and trees and nature.
Where was your mother and father?
My father was absent and my mother was at work. So I was with a caretaker.
Uh-huh. So you were pretty alone.
Yeah.
And so you had to make up your own mind. You had to create in your mind the world. When I say this, when I say this to you, you know, as an orphan, when I say this to you, does it touch your heart, or do you think of yourself as a, well, that's just the way it was?
No, it's a lot more profound, because when I think about it, I was making up my mind a lot more. And now that when different options were shown to me, it was like, oh my gosh, there's another option. There's more thinking involved.
Yeah. So has any human ever embraced you completely?
No.
Has any tree ever embraced you completely? More likely,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
Very much.
I understand. So the question here becomes, what's your name?
Jade.
Jade?
Yes.
Yeah, one of my favorite names. Jade, what would it take for you to trust someone?
Knowing that they had an answer, to be secure.
Nah, that would be the exact reason not to trust them. All right? So in other words, the reason not to trust someone is because they have an answer, because nobody's got an answer for Jade. You just got to know, you have to know they have good intentions. So just curiously, Jade, just because I hear something, have you ever been in therapy?
Mild therapy.
Mild therapy, right? And what was wrong with the therapist?
I didn't trust him.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, so now we have a picture of Jade. Here I have this beautiful picture of Jade the Beautiful, who is out there in nature, who trusts nature, who tries to get lessons from nature, who says one of the ways you get through life is to let the nature go through the seasons, and you find all these wonderful answers, and then you look through philosophy. But the place you're looking to fill is a hole in your heart that's been there for a long time. And I'll tell you something, Jade, by calling here today, I have a suspicion you're ready to let somebody in.
A little bit.
Yeah. Well, give it a thought. I have an idea. How about you send me an email?
Okay.
Armand at thepositivemind.com. That's easy enough. Send me an email and tell me that if you could have someone in your life who is really close to you, what would they be like? And you describe them for me, okay?
Okay.
Things will begin to change just as you do that.
Okay, thank you so much.
Jade, thank you so much for calling.
Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, you too. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, I'm Judy, and I was listening to your talk, and I thought, gee, I'm going to pull over and call and see if I can get through. And I thought, if it's right, I'll get through, and if it isn't, I won't. So I got through, and now I can talk to you.
Good for you, Judy. That was a terrific thing to do. Smart to pull over, too.
Well, yes, absolutely.
So you really wanted to reach out to us. You wanted to see us. You wanted to make contact with us.
Well, it was because of the level of discussion on spirituality that you were presenting, because I've lately been looking at consciousness, and the more I understand about consciousness and staying conscious, I realize what you had said earlier, or the other gentleman, about detachment. It isn't about not being involved or not participating. It's about not taking it personally, that this is just an opportunity to choose how you want to be from moment to moment. And the question I have for you is, though, as I experience this, I find that, you know, the way the thoughts are is I've learned to realize, oh, my goodness, I've gone off to these thoughts. And, yeah, okay, that's a choice, but I don't have to hook onto that particular thought. What is it that I want to do now? The challenge I find is that there's so much in life that needs to be achieved, or at least I'm at a point in my life that I'm trying to achieve something that right now is very challenging for me, that I find I'm getting to where it's easy to slip into your thoughts as opposed to just taking actions on them.
Yeah, I think it's very difficult. You know what's missing? I know this is going to sound terrible, because it's going to be the second person today I'm going to say this to. Your heart's missing. So who loves you?
Oh, a lot of people love me, but I mean...
Yeah, okay, now I'm going to say this. Who do you feel connected to, really connected to?
I guess my husband, my son, and my sister.
Okay, now what's been going on between you and your sister just recently?
Recently?
Yeah, anything uncomfortable?
No, I mean, I have several sisters, so, I mean, it could be you're picking up something from a different sister. I mean...
Uh-huh, and you have something... You have something from a different sister that you're having a problem with?
Well, it's not so much a problem as that she has chosen to distance herself, and so that's her choice.
Now, why did she do that? I know you say that's her choice, but doesn't that hurt you that she chooses to distance herself?
Only if I choose to get hurt by it.
All right. Now, listen. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I hear. I understand the concept. You know, what's your name? Judy? Yeah. Judy, I understand the concept, but you see... We sometimes could say that to ourselves only if I choose to get hurt by it, or we can go through the emotion and say, it hurts terribly, but I'm not going to let it dominate my life. So there's one of two ways. You either use the consciousness to escape the feeling, or you incorporate the feeling in your consciousness. And I'm saying to you, the answer to your question, Judy, is you have to incorporate your own human emotion in with your consciousness rather than using your consciousness to rise above your human emotion. Does that make sense?
I'd have to disagree only because...
But does it make sense?
Well, anything can make sense, even how you perceive it. I mean, really.
Absolutely right. Go ahead.
I guess what I'm saying is that I'm not... undermining my feelings about it. It's not like I'm pushing them and stacking them away. What I'm realizing is a lot of people suffer, and they don't need to suffer because the paradigm from which they live from perceives something in such a way that it forces them, well, it doesn't force them, but it torments them. What I'm working with is not so much that I'm not accepting my feelings of things or I'm shoving them away. It's just that I'm looking at it and going, you know, there is so much energy out there and I'm creating what I believe to be a better me, whoever that is, in my choices. And there is only so much energy, at least I'm finding at this time. So do I really want to go down that? Because you can. It's sort of like energy or thoughts have certain energies to them, so that if you go down this thought, then that leads you to that thought. And before you know it, you've got yourself all worked up.
All right. Now, wait. Thank you very much. Judy, did you have a question?
Yes. My question at the beginning, which I asked, was that in when you're dealing with being consciously aware, okay, and being in the present moment, if you're taking on, because this is where I think you picked
okay,
up.
Okay, but now I got to tell you, I'm out of time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I'm trying to get your question, and when I get the question, I get a big background.
Okay.
Tell me.
My question is, how does one, when you think the long-term goal of something is worth it, if your heart's not in it, but the long-term goal you believe will help you spiritually, how do you get past that your heart's not in it? Because I think that's where you got on, if you were picking up that.
Yes, and my answer is, you got to put your heart in it no matter what. That the heart is part of it. And that you can't, the only reason that you get out of the heart of it is because it's too painful. But pain passes, and it's worth feeling. And I tell you something, between now and tomorrow, whatever has taken place with your sister, probably with your good intention, without any resentment, you have a way of healing it. And it would be a big gift. Maybe you just have to send her a pumpkin pie or something and not ask anything back. But, there's more to it, of course, a great deal. And you've asked some very important questions. And I want to thank you for calling in.
Thank you very much. And you have a good day.
Thank you. You too. So that question, Bernie, is there it is again. You know, a lot of people want spirituality without pain. They use spirituality as a way of just escaping the uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
very true.
And what we're looking for is to incorporate it all, because so what? It hurts. So what? So what?
Well, I think that's what she was essentially saying when she said that she's having trouble putting her heart into it.
Yeah, because it hurts too much. And I say put your heart into it, even if it does hurt. Hey, we'll be back with you tomorrow. No. Not tomorrow. Tomorrow is that day, Native American Day or Thanksgiving Day, whatever you want to call it, special programming here at WBAI. But I'd love to get a holiday Christmas or a card from you. if you would send me one at thepositivemind.com, armand@thepositivemind.com, we will be back with you next week. I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. with more of this wonderful stuff. Thank you so much. Thank you, Bernie Starr. Once again,
you're a wonderful guy.
Great. Nice to see you. I'll see you again. Starr, what's the name of your website, Bernie? The book.
Well, the book is Escape Your Own Prison, Why We Need Spirituality.
What's the name of the website?
Well, they can email me, star1@AOL.com.
That's the one.
STARRONE@AOL.com.
Thank you. Bye-bye.